Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
A bump in the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed. You'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinister Who?
Hello and welcome to another edition of Freaky Friday, where we tell your odd but true stories. It is Friday, April 17th, and have we got a lineup of wild stories for you today. Some of these, you guys, always surprising but jaw-dropping.
Sorry that everything's a bummer lately.
No, I mean,
Freaky Friday.
So, no, we thank you for sending all your stories in. And also just another call too, as you're listening to this, if it does spark something in your mind, send it to us. I know people said, a couple people today said that, you know, they've been sitting on it, waiting on it. And a friend of mine was just saying that, you know, writing can be hard sometimes. And he was like, when I was in college, I would just pull out my voice memos note and just audio record myself saying the thing I want to say and then just type it later. So if you struggle with writing out your story, maybe just pull up your voice note, say it, and then take it and type it, and you'll have a story to share with us like all these generous people today.
Yes, thank you so very much to everyone who has sent in your stories. And I mean, I guess before we jump into this, let's just go ahead and plug Crime Wave.
Oh, yeah.
It's really,
yeah.
It's really no, we're still working on the transition part of how to go from Crime Wave to talking about CSA. So we'll figure that out eventually.
Well, Crime Wave at Sea is next February, and I can't believe it's less than a year away. And we're going to be there 8th through the 12th. And go to crimewaveatsea.com, use code Sinister. You're joining us, all of the best true crime creators in the space, True Crime Campfire, Paranormal Chicks. You got No Sleep joining us for the first time, True Crime Garage for the first time, Case File. Casey from Case File is going to show his face on stage and be interviewed by Vicky Petratus, who we've had on the show. So we get to reunite with Vicky in person.
I'm so excited to meet her in person.
I'm going to give you the biggest hug, Vicky. Thank you. You were our first Freaky Friday guest, so it's appropriate that we talk about Vicky Petratus. Yeah. It's all full circle, so come hang out with us and meet Vicky and Casey and us and hang out. It's going to be a good time.
Totally, totally good time.
Hell yeah.
And then, you know, the next hour, let's all learn some things.
We're going to jump in together.
I know for a fact that these will resonate with people because almost every single one of these was sent in because they heard a story similar that made them feel courageous enough to send it in. Or sometimes it's like a blocked out memory and somebody can just say like one thing and you're like, oh my God, I completely forgot about that.
100%. So hopefully if this sparks something in you, hopefully it's a healing thing and share it with us because we'd love to share it with others because the sharing begat sharing.
Sharing begat sharing.
Just like the Bible.
Abraham begot Abraham and so on and so forth.
Sharon be Sharon.
Well, I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get freaky. This first one is from Tara and is called My Dad Was a Monster. Content warning, this discusses CSA, CSAM, and suicide. Tara writes, hey guys, I discovered you about 6 or so months ago, and I've thought about sending in one story, but listening to last week's about homeland security just honestly makes me sad. My childhood was like many others' childhoods, riddled with trauma. My dad was not a good person. He wasn't a nice person, and he shouldn't be considered a person at all. He's a monster of the worst kind. I'm sure by now everyone knows what I mean when I say that, but in case you don't, he was a pedophile. I was one of his victims, and the abuse started when I was about 2 or 3 years old. Fast forward a little over 20 years later, I get a knock at my door. I poked my head through the window and chose not to answer, as I didn't recognize the man. He put something in my screen door, so about 10 minutes later, I opened the door to look, and it was the business card of a police detective asking me specifically to call him. What the fuck? At first, I was kind of nervous because I used to do a lot of drugs as a teenager and halfway through my 20s. Gee, I wonder why. And I thought that I was in some sort of trouble. Eventually, I talked myself out of that thinking, because why would a detective knock on the door to ask some random woman about her history of drug use? I never hurt anyone, and I've never done anything criminal aside from drugs and drinking and smoking underage. I called him, and it turned out that he wanted to talk to me about my dad. I hate that even well into my 30s, just thinking of the phrase, my dad, it just doesn't sound good. It still bothers me a lot and makes me angry that no one protected me. It turns out that I wasn't the only one who needed to be protected from him. He was facing a slew of charges of CSAM. The cop told me it was some of the most, quote, egregious things he'd ever seen in his life. Some of the victims were as young as I was when he actually got his disgusting hands on me. I was wondering how and why the hell he knew to contact the guy's daughter. Turns out while going through my dad's computer, they came across an exchange between my dad and I that occurred a few years earlier on Facebook. The slimy shit wanted to be a part of my life. Why? Aren't I a little old now? I ended up telling him to get fucked, that I remember everything he did to me and everyone in the family knows what he did, and that he should just kill himself just like his parents killed themselves. Though their deaths weren't deliberate. They both died due to their alcoholism. Anywho, back to the present, the police wanted to talk to me in person. I asked if it would help put him away, and they said it might, so I told them I would do it. Unfortunately, my memories weren't enough for them to use to throw the book through my dad's skull, but they had enough CSAM that he was facing about a decade in prison. That's it? Fast forward a few months later, and one morning I got a phone call. It was the detective. My dad was found dead. Had been dead for a few days. I had the weirdest reaction. I actually cried. I cried a lot, and I don't know why. Turns out he took my advice and completed suicide. That's not why I was sad. Why was I even sad? Fucking coward never took accountability for a goddamn thing in his life. The only thing he left were the dates of his parents' deaths on a piece of paper, and a much more current date, assuming the day he finally did the world a favor. Followed by the word F-I-N. I kept the ashes after they burned his corpse up real good. Why? I don't know. They sat in a Teavana tea container on a shelf in my room until one day when I was cleaning the litter box. I just happened to look up between scoops, saw that stupid container, opened it as well as the bag inside, and dumped it all in the same bag as the soiled kitty litter. And with that, I threw out the man who ruined my fucking childhood. Thank you for hearing my story. Here's a picture of my cat Pippi and his little cow. P.S. As of early 2023, I am California sober. Love you guys.
Oh, well, Pippi and his little cow are very cute. And
oh,
thank
my
you.
Goodness gracious.
Appreciate Pippi for offering you a place to dispose of your father's remains.
And I bet Pippi is quite the comforting cat when this is such a unbearably hard thing to go through. And man, I'm so very sorry. I'm so very sorry. No one protected you, and you have every right to be mad about that. I think all victims do when they're children. Certainly. You know, I mean, it was somebody else's job to protect you. You were literally 2 years old. That's crazy.
Yeah. If you ever said, like, if you think about it, like, why didn't that little kid get out of the forest by themselves? Well, because they're a little kid. You said, you hear how you sound? You know what I mean? So not you, obviously. I'm just saying, like, if one was going to blame a kid. So I agree.
I can't even form complete sentences. How am I supposed to protect myself from this monster?
From somebody who has decades of experience and is specifically targeting the exact child that you are. So people like this, I mean, my therapist one time said, we all have the right to feel about how a dead person at how we want to feel. She was like, you know, the world often is like, well, you have to respect your parents, or you have to respect the dead, or you have to respect whatever. She was like, that's, you're dishonoring your own truth, because if your truth is, hell yeah, he's dead. Awesome news. That's fine. You can celebrate someone being dead. That's like, what a crazy bind to put on yourself to be like, well, I have to pretend fake this. So I'm glad for you that he is out of your life. But I echo Christy's sentiments. I'm very sorry you were let down the way that you were, because no kid deserves any of this, especially. And this, to me, in my opinion, is why we've got to throw the book, like you said, through their skulls. If somebody is found hurting children, as a society, we've sort of likened CSAM, both production and material, with, you know, something that, you know, 10 years was like not even like tax evasion. I mean, it's like you might hit someone with a car accidentally and maybe get the same amount of time. That's so inadequate. And when you see things like the current, it's not a trial, it's the punishment phase in Dallas going on for Tanner Horner, who's the man who sexually abused and killed Athena Strand. You see, it is a pattern. He has hurt young, two so far have come forward. And I would bet, as Nancy would say, dollars to donuts, that there is more than that. So it's just like, you know, your father did not stop with you. There were going to be other victims. So we, just from a policy perspective, you hurt a kid, maybe you don't get out for 30 years. I mean, and it just has to be draconian. And and I think in Florida, they've passed, you know, the death penalty for that. Does that incentivize people to kill the children they abuse? I don't know. You tell me. But at least just make it very clear that this is we take it seriously and we prosecute it seriously, because Athena Strand would be alive if he had gone to jail for, you know, if those girls would have felt comfortable coming forward. It's absolutely not his prior victim's fault whatsoever, because we live in a society where if you come forward, they go, I don't know. Are you sure about that? You sure about that? Mm-hmm. So people like your dad, people like Tanner Horner, they've got to get, you know, buried under the jail.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And your reaction when you found out he was dead, I think that's completely valid. I mean, you have been building up decades of hurt, resentment, bitterness, grief about losing your childhood. I mean, he may not have killed you, but he killed your childhood. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, you'll never get that back. So when you finally realize he's fucking gone, like the well of emotions that can rise up and come out of you that you weren't expecting, that maybe you didn't even know were like in there, but a good cathartic cry and getting all of that out can really feel so good. So I hope that after that and processing and everything, that you're in a better place now. Congrats to being California sober. That's incredible.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Obviously you would have done drugs and drinking underage. Uh-huh. I mean, it's no one is surprised. I would have done the same. I did do the same, you know? Mm-hmm. So my father was no way involved. Just want to make that clear.
Yeah.
But it's a weird thing. Like when we find out things and we have a reaction we weren't expecting, I always think later, like, why was that my first reaction? And kind of dig into, like, why did I feel like a sense of relief or a sense of sadness over something I was not sad about, I was angry about? And, you know, that's what you can work out with your therapist, which I hope you have a good one.
No, absolutely. I think sometimes our tears are salty. We just don't know the recipe. Like, what even went into this? Is it, am I relieved and mourning a childhood I never had? And also, you know, sad, you know, so like Christy says, something to work out with somebody that you trust. But, you know, the fact that it happened is real and valid, and that is just how you reacted. And you put his ashes where they belonged, it sounded like.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for sending that in. And please give Pippi and his little Highland cow a belly scratch from us.
Sinister Hood will be right back. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Financial stress affects far more than our bank accounts. It can take a serious toll on mental health and relationships, with 88% of Americans feeling some form of financial stress at the start of 2026. Money worries often bring anxiety, sleep disruption, and even depression, and they're one of the leading causes of conflict for couples. This month, we want to normalize the emotional weight of financial stress and remind people that struggling with money doesn't mean they failed. Sometimes it's just about accessing the right kind of support. BetterHelp can get you access to the right therapist.
BetterHelp does the initial match work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12 plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, though, you can switch to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recs. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally. And it works, with an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 stars for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews.
When life feels overwhelming, therapy can help. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com/sinister. That's BetterHelp.com/sinister.
This next one is from A and is called, I Didn't Know I Was the Victim. Content warning, this discusses child sexual abuse. A writes, hey y'all, I was just catching up on some more recent episodes and something from Freaky Friday episode 208 hit a bit of a nerve that I didn't realize was so raw. In this episode, there was a story of a woman who was sexually assaulted at the St. Louis Zoo. And after that story, Christy mentioned that although this woman wasn't touched in any way physically, she is still 100% a victim. At this point, I had to pause the episode to really think about that. Growing up, my grandmother had married a man that I considered my grandpa. I was 8 when they got married. I was the flower girl and everything. So this man was so ingrained in my life for so many years. I was considered the favorite grandkid, specifically by him. He bought me better Christmas gifts, surprise candy, anything I wanted, basically. None of my other cousins got this treatment, even though they were very close in age to me. I never really understood why I was the one he picked, but growing up, I didn't really mind. I remember so vividly the day we heard the news. Fast forward about 10 years, and I am freshly 18, starting college in Memphis. Still love that place. And my parents were taking me on a little trip to scope out the town before I moved into my dorm. It was coincidentally my birthday, and after a long day out on the town with my parents, I was laying in the back of their car snoozing on the way back to the hotel. In a sleepy haze, I remember hearing my mom answer her phone and gasp, then go silent. That got my attention and woke me up right away, so I pretended to be asleep still. When my mom hung up the phone, she turned around to see if I was awake, and I gave up the ruse. Sitting up, I asked what was wrong, and her face fell. She said, I can tell you now or I can wait until tomorrow so I don't ruin your birthday. Well, that is a one-way ticket to me saying, tell me everything right now. She solemnly told me that had been my aunt on the phone, and she had very serious news about her daughter, my cousin. She had been sexually assaulted by this man who I was so close with. Over the years, as I grew up a bit and stopped coming around their house as much, my favorite grandchild title was passed on to my aunt's daughter, who at the time couldn't have been older than 2. When I heard this news, my stomach dropped and I couldn't think at all. Not only did my opinion of somebody I had loved change in an instant, everyone was now looking at me with pity. I really could not comprehend it at the time. Over the next few weeks, there was a lot of investigation and arguments and family feuding. My grandma refused to believe it was true, and we went a long time without her talking to her as well. During all of this, I was asked to come in to talk about my experience with him. I don't think I really understood why at the time, but looking back now, I do. I was a victim. Though to my knowledge he never assaulted me in any way, there were always times where he made me uncomfortable in little ways, always being as close as he could, insisting on hugs, putting his hands around my neck as a, quote, joke. These little things I thought were kind of weird but never spoke up or told anyone made me uncomfortable. They all happen around others, and I assumed because nobody else stopped it, it must be normal. I never considered myself to be one of his victims until I heard what Christy said. He died a few years ago, and I never saw him again after we found out what he did. But it's like he still haunts me, like little things trigger memories, good or bad. I now know that is a part of trauma that I am still working through. All this to say, thank you. You've made me realize that I was a victim, despite not being the one assaulted, and I always felt guilty for thinking I was. I will leave you on a bubble. I'm recently engaged to a wonderful man who is the most supportive and loving person I know. We bought our first house together, and we have two lovely animals that we treat as our kids. Mac is the sweet mutt of a dog, and she was a rescue who rescued me in turn. Bill Murray, the shelter gave him the name, and I couldn't find it in myself to change it, is the not-so-tiny orange boy who has negative brain cells. Thank you both for being a light in the dark that is this country recently. You make me feel a little less crazy and like living in the South doesn't have to be a bad thing.
Well, first of all, just because they're in front of me, look at these baby dog and baby
so
cat.
So cute. Oh my gosh, little kitty cat.
Their faces.
Paws up on the table.
So perfect.
I love when animals do human things. It's just looks so like very ready. Funny and cute.
He's like, it's my turn to play this game. Oh, mm-hmm. It's very cute and sweet. This really, this resonates with something I was just reading in a book. Spoiler alert for Dick Van Dyke's 100 Rules to Live into 100. But he encouraged find patterns in your life. And he said his pattern was that he would get really triggered when women would hit on him. He said to the point mm-hmm. that it was not even a joke that he said, my heart would race. I would start to sweat. I would stutter. I would panic. And he said, I did not know what it was. He said it happened in a bar. A bartender hit on him and he never went back to the bar because it was like so embarrassing. A teenager, like just he had all these memories. And he said it wasn't until he was met Arlene, which was his third wife, like in his 70s, and he went to therapy. He said he realized that as a child in fifth grade, a female teacher had him stay after class and had him sit very close to her and was like, I'm going to have you grade papers. And he said, you know, at the time, I didn't even process it. And he said, I did not tell anyone until Arlene, until my third wife. He's in his 70s. And he said she pulled him close and was touching him. And he said, I don't want to claim, you know, childhood sexual abuse or anything. But he said, once I realized that the way I got out of that is I said, I have to go take care of my little brother. And I just like jumped up and ran out of there. He said, my body was like, jump up and run out of there. Mm-hmm. Like anytime a woman was coming onto him. And he said, it was not until in his 70s that he tracked it down that it was this. And he said, you know, I downplayed it like, oh, you know, she didn't really touch me. She didn't really, but he said, I really had to come to the terms with the fact that like I was a child and she was a teacher and she should not have done that. That mm-hmm. was not okay. And she did it. And that was the effect on my life. And, it, you know, it got written into the Dick Van Dyke Show, like as part of like a funny bit and stuff. But he said it really was like hurting his life because he said fans would come up and want to talk to me and hug me. And he said if it was a female fan, I mean, I would panic. Mm-hmm. And so stuff like that where you're like, you weren't touched, but like you were a kid and this was an adult. And even if people saw it happen, it still is not okay.
Absolutely. Trauma is anything that affects you being able to just, you know, mm-hmm. live comfortably. If anything triggers you and something traumatic happened, whether it was of the most serious offenses or it made you uncomfortable because it could have led to more serious offenses, it doesn't matter. If it mm-hmm. made you uncomfortable and made you feel violated, that is real. Mm-hmm. That it was a real lived experience and no one can take that away from you.
Yeah. You know, I think if so, you said, oh, you know, a guy with a knife chased me. We wouldn't mm-hmm. go, well, he didn't get you.
Yeah.
You know, like that's, it still should not have happened. The fact that you were chased at all. The fact
you were held at gunpoint, but you made it out. Yeah.
Yeah.
And now I can't drive my car because I'm worried that I'm going to get hijacked at any second.
You know? No, truly. And it's even tangential stuff, you know, something that happens to a sibling and you see that, you know, you have some sort of reaction to it. So I feel like in this case, because it was an exact, you know, the same pattern with your cousin, and then you saw the eventual end to that pattern, that your body does go, on the one hand, oh my God, that could have been me. And on the second hand, like, that could have been me. Like, there's a relief, mm-hmm. and then there is a absolute heaviness that maybe leads to patterns in your life, you know, like Dick Van Dyke said. And he said, I'm not saying there's, you know, I didn't have to say, oh, my life was ruined or anything wrong. But he said, as soon as I figured out that pattern, I figured out how to navigate those moments. And I felt empowered because I just had the why. He said it was just a key to be like, oh, obviously I would feel that way. So
it's finally getting the answer to a question that you've been asking yourself, like when something's on the tip of your tongue and you're mm-hmm. like, oh, and then it finally comes to you, you're like, well, now I can start healing that because I know what to name it.
Yeah, it's just a big relief. So I'm sorry that happened on your 18th birthday when you're moving into the dorm. It's such a, but sometimes, you know, life happens when it happens and maybe it happens for a reason. And it's like, you're equipped to handle this now. Like, move on. Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
Well, we're all trying to eat healthier around here in this house, and I cannot thank Hero Bread enough for making that fairly easy. We don't have to not have sandwiches, not have hamburgers, not have pasta. We can have all of those delicious things because Hero Bread doesn't have all the carbs that you don't want to get and that you maybe don't want to give your children either.
With Hero Bread, you can focus on your health goals and still indulge in that soft, fluffy experience you love, like enjoying a nutritious breakfast wrap, avocado toast, grilled cheese with cozy soup, or family burger night. Their products are delicious and flavorful, but have ultra-low net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and are high in fiber. My husband, Paris, loves the bagels. Eats them all. Eats them all when they come in this house. What about y'all? Bagel fam?
Oh, bagel fam. We've made mac and cheese with their elbow macaroni noodles that no one could tell the difference. The kids gobbled it up. Everything has been good. The loaves of bread, bagels, tortillas, pasta, never had anything bad from them. Can't recommend them enough.
You'd never know it's low net carb and high fiber bread from the texture. Get that soft, fluffy experience you know and love. And no matter what time of day you're having it, have a hero at your meal.
Oh! Get monthly small batch drops of indulgent favorites like their 4 gram net carb bagel and new surprises coming this year. I can't wait to find out what they are.
Hero is a hero because they're giving you the delicious bagels and a surprise. Hero Bread, more of a hero. Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code creepy at checkout. That's creepy at hero.co.
Well, this next one is from Jess and is called In Response to the Jesse Test. Content warning, there's mentions of rape. Jess writes, this is in response to the Freaky Friday story. In this world full of anger, learn from my mistakes, in episode 206. As soon as I heard the story, I felt moved to tell mine. About 10 years ago, when I was a junior in high school, I went through a really nasty breakup. I was the typical gloom and doom that any first love relationship heartbreak comes with, and it was no secret. During this time, I was working my first job at an ice cream shop, where I worked with one of my friends from volleyball. Let's call her Hannah. She was always so positive, laughing, making light of shitty situations. You name it, she was the embodiment of sunshine. Well, while I was being insufferable, she was being her usually lovely self, which I, unfortunately, couldn't stand because of my own self-loathing. I remember snapping at her one day, just over something stupid, and her mood never wavered. One day, I came into a shift where Hannah and I were working together, just the two of us. I remember she went on a break, and it took a while until she came back out. When I started to worry, I went into the break room to check on her, and she was curled up on the floor, sobbing. What I didn't know before this, and what she graciously and courageously shared with me this day, was that she had been raped a couple months prior. She had been in the process of getting a restraining order against the guy, and she just found out it didn't go through. The most fucked up part, her dad was the chief of police and had to break the news to her. She shared all of this with me after I found her. I locked the front door and sat with her while she told me all these terrible things that had happened. From that point onward, I vowed to never make anyone feel bad for feeling joy. No matter what mood I'm in, or if I hear someone being annoyed with how positive someone is being, I'll try and help them see the other side of things. If she was able to show so much strength by just being positive, who was I to deprive her of finding that strength? I felt disgusted with myself. Tiny's words really hit me when they said, it's simply not enough to live every day as if it were your last. You must also live each day as if it were their last, whoever they may be. That really hit home with me in my philosophy, and I just want Tiny to know that even though you may still live with guilt, it is not your fault. I hope you find peace in knowing what you've learned with the Jesse test. It will direct you to be the best you to the people around you you can be. Thank you for being that person and for the strength you have carried. And thank you for sharing your story. Thank you also to Christy and Heather and the grace that you handle these stories with. Y'all are the best, Jess.
Oh, I love when one story inspires someone to share another. This is such a good lesson because imagine all the people too that went in that ice cream shop that ordered ice cream from Hannah who maybe were like, you didn't put the fucking whipped cream on it, you fucking idiot. And you're like, well, she's got some things to worry about. Like, yeah. She's worrying whether the restraining order on her rapist will go through or not. And even the chief of police's daughter can't be protected.
That's wild. Yeah. I think, too, it's a good lesson and example of a lot of times when things are the worst in our life is when we put on the happiest faces, because we don't want people asking us questions about what's wrong. We're not ready to talk about it. So you kind of go overboard on turning up the positivity, and then you find out, oh, this is why she was acting like that, because she was masking how she truly felt until you find her crumpled on the floor in the break room. And good for you for sitting there and fucking like locking the door. You're like, the ice cream can wait.
Yeah, yeah, this we'll be back.
This is way more important. And it's one of those times where you learn something about someone else that in turn teaches you so much about yourself.
Truly. I mean, it teaches us what type of person you are, Jess, that when you open that door, you didn't go, yikes, I'll handle the front in case any customers come. Or just like, can you get up off the floor and cry? You know, come on, we gotta go. So a lot of people could have been with Hannah, and how lucky for both Hannah and you that it was you that was there, because of what this is a very valuable lesson to learn early on, you know, junior in high school, that you think later on, oh, I did not have the full picture. And I remember a couple times in school like this where you think that kid is just so one way or the other, so annoying, so whatever. And then, you know, it's parent teacher day and there's no parents. Or it's parent-teacher day and the parent, and you're like, that person's supposed to take care of a kid. They are struggling. And it definitely changes your perspective to just be like, all kids are our kids, and we have to take care of all of them, every one of them, wherever they live.
So, you might find out something years later, decades later, about someone, and you're like, oh, that's why they acted that way in school. You know? And now, as an adult, I can look back on that with my adult brain and realize how much they were suffering. But our brains at that time are still developing, and we just can't really understand some of that stuff yet.
Not at all. But you had it in you, Jess, that kindness, that empathy and the compassion, and you just were with her. And I think that's in a moment like that, especially one where she probably felt extremely powerless, not only as a minor, a woman, the daughter of the chief of police, and you still can't get protected, and a rape victim, and the system is letting her down, to at least have solidarity of just a human being to be like, I see you and let me hug you. Like, I'm sorry.
Definitely.
And I hope the guy, even though there was not a restraining order, perhaps he was hit by a train.
Right after. He walked outside to celebrate and a car hit him.
Whoops.
Oopsies.
Sorry. And thanks, Jess, for saying that we handled these stories with grace, as I wish death upon yet another sexual abuser. Sorry, gang. If you're looking for a sympathetic ear to sex predators, you won't find it here.
Not even a little bit. I literally have... any part of me that could have found compassion for anything like that is dead now. And so I just say, I told you I'm getting my tiny guillotine.
Yes.
And they have a choice. They can spend the rest of their lives behind bars, or I'm cutting their dick and balls off. They can choose.
The tiny guillotine, the balls have to go through it too. They're like, it's not just the whole thing.
No, it's all of it. All of it.
And so I'm like, it's an act of nonviolence to cut off the poison limb of a tree to save a tree, right? It's more violent to let the poison limb stay on the tree and poison the whole tree. So allow us to cut the limb off. It's very quick and very sharp.
So fast. It will be so fast.
They're like, wait, it's not sharp. You're like, it's not. I lied. It's very dull.
It's going to take a minute. It's going to take a few up and downs. Before,
sorry, friend.
Yes, but sorry.
Grace. You either have a little bit of it, but you don't want too much grace, or you'll topple over.
You'll fall over.
Thanks, Jess. Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
Cravings aren't just about nicotine. They're about the habit, the hand-to-mouth motion, oral fixation, the momentary pause. When that loop is broken, cravings spike. Fume replaces your habit with a flavored air fidget device that gives your hands and mouth something to do, distracting cravings without nicotine, vapor, or batteries. Don't just try to quit. Upgrade the habit loop. reach for Fume instead. We recommend the Journey Pack, which comes with the Fume device plus 6 delicious flavors.
And the flavors are delicious. I'm a crisp mint kind of a gal. The strawberry is good. It's sweet as well. It just kind of depends on what you want. But I like to have something that literally doesn't matter where you're at. You can take it out, fidget with it at the very least, get you some flavored air as well. It's not something that's, you know, banned from waiting rooms or even just sitting in your car at the drive-thru waiting for someone to just go and get out of your way. You need something with you, and why not make it something good and minty and delicious with Fume?
Mm-hmm. When you grab a Journey Pack, you'll also get a free gift just for using our code CREEPY.
Fume has already helped over 700,000 people take steps toward better habits. And now it's your turn. Use our code CREEPY to get a free gift with your Journey Pack. Head to tryfume.com. That's TRYFUM.com and use code CREEPY to claim your free gift today. This next one is from my daughter, Anonymous, and the subject line is a twofer. Anonymous writes, "Hello, fellow goth girls at heart. I have two stories, but one is very short. First, short and funny. The statement about, quote, closing the book on an exposed penis remind me of the day in high school that I did just that. My junior year, a boy in my class said, 'Hey, Anon, what does this mean?' while gesturing toward the book that was partially open in his lap. I glanced over to see what he was talking about, and lo and behold, his mostly flaccid, remarkably unimpressive penis was resting twixt the pages. I looked back up at him to see him grinning excitedly. I glanced back down, reached over, and snapped the book closed before going back to my classwork, and pretending I had no idea why he was suddenly howling. What was he going to say? 'Oh, I flashed this unsuspecting girl and she smashed my wiener.' No way. My only consequences were immediate satisfaction and a keen sense of pride. Story two is not so funny. I'm a library media specialist in Kentucky. I love my job for three main reasons. One, I love reading. Two, I love learning. And three, I love sharing what I learn with others. A less pleasant part of my job is the fact that while most of the people in the building are under 10 years old, we have to have frequent lockdown drills and complete a yearly active shooter training. We do always try to get the students to take the drill seriously, though, and we also try not to scare them. It's a fine line we walk. One day, last school year, while I had a class of fifth graders, we received a message to immediately go on lockdown. And this is not a drill. My stomach sank. All my students immediately went silent, except for a few gasps, and began quickly making their way to our safe zone. I don't have the best space to go into a lockdown, as most of the hallway walls are comprised of floor-to-ceiling windows. We all just have to hunker down in the space behind the circulation desk and in my tiny 5-foot by 7-foot office. The moment I realized there was no way I was going to be able to squeeze 27 fifth graders into that tiny amount of space without some of them being visible to anyone in the hall was the second time my stomach dropped. I did my best to block them in with my body and a book car. One of our students was a special needs kiddo and just simply did not grasp the severity of the situation. He was all smiles the whole time and just having the best time squished in with all of his classmates, trying to talk to all of them. They kept reaching out to pat his arm or his back and shushing him gently. One of the other boys in the class put his arm around him to try and help keep him calm. A few kids started crying, struggling to keep from sobbing out loud. Their friends held them, and some of them asked each other if they wanted to pray together. The entire time, they're also whispering to me, 'What is happening? Is this real? How long do we have to do this? Is there a bad guy here?' And I didn't have answers for them. All I could do was keep smiling at them and telling them, 'I'm not sure what's happening, but you're safe. We're safe. You're doing great, and you are safe.' And wonder whether I was lying to them. Watching them breaking down, reaching for each other to give or receive comfort, their compassion on full and stunning display both awed and gutted me. After we were released from the lockdown, one of my students was noticeably withdrawn, so I checked in on him and asked him how he was feeling. His brow was all bunched up, and he started tearing up while he said, 'When I was sitting there, if someone shot through the wall, I could have died. I would have been dead. What the fuck are we doing? Like, as a whole society. We were on lockdown for half an hour before we received a message letting us know it wasn't just us. The entire district had been on lockdown because of a tip the police received about a student having a weapon. But they were uncertain about which school they attended. In the article I'll link you, you'll see some dumbass teenager thought it would be a funny prank to play. Teens are just enormous toddlers, so untethered from any sense of morality that the concept of death is often hilarious to them. I was so relieved, of course, that no one had entered our building with a weapon, but I am so angry that school children and school staff have to live this way because of some greasy lobbyists and widespread ignorance. I still have 16 years until retirement. I'm trying to remain hopeful that we will eventually enact meaningful change. Thanks for all you do. I saw you in Cincinnati last year, and it was the highlight of the summer. I hope you'll come back to my neck of the woods again. Love from Appalachia.
Well, thank you, Anonymous, for coming to see us in Cincinnati last year. That was a ton of fun. And I'm trying to get back to Appalachia because I'm on the side of Appalachia TikTok, and there are so many stories from there.
Let's say the word. We'll get my aunt with her Jeep to take us up into the mountains. Yeah. She lives in the Smoky Mountains. Let's go, Aunt Donna.
Oh,
shout out.
Yeah.
I'm going on an Aunt Donna trip. It'll be so fun. Okay. We'll find Bigfoot in the portals.
Right. Well, on to the very serious nature of this. Well, yeah, we'll end with the penis smashing because that's our little bubble.
It's a fun bubble.
the lockdown drills never get easier. There's nothing to say about it. And teacher, students alike are traumatized and affected by them. And to know that, like, oh, there is absolutely zero way that I can protect all these kids if someone comes down here has to be the biggest gut punch. And I'm so glad that it ended up not being as big of a deal as it could have been. They will lock down entire districts if they don't know. I mean, it's happened around here too. And you'd rather them be safe than sorry. So you know, the drills are traumatic. Clearly, this kid, even 10 years old, realizes somebody shot a gun. I would be dead right now. Mm-hmm. And you have to say, yes, little 10-year-old, that is true. And that's why we're hiding behind this desk right now.
Especially, yeah, fifth graders, they're old enough to start putting two and two together. You know, I mean, first, second-ish, maybe even third grade, you're kind of like, maybe it's a bandit, you know? Yeah. And then at some point, you're going to accidentally see something, or your big brother or sister is going to tell you something, or your parents talked about it. So that is the right question that you're asking, Anonymous. What the fuck are we doing? And it's a lot of lobbyists. You're right. Greasy lobbyists. And it's just money. It's big money in politics. We don't own our legislators as much as the big machines, the corporate machines do, and the NRA.
And I would argue that as we've seen how little the people in charge care about children, in fact, they're quite keen on destroying their lives, that why would they care if a school full of kids got gunned down when they don't value their lives in the first place? It might not be in their best interest to pass a bunch of gun bills that would stop that.
No, it's truly maddening. And I think it's going to become, hopefully, especially as all these kids grow up and can vote, Gen Z, I think it will become a demand, kind of like, what are you doing to stop this? Because they grew up in it. I mean, you and I, like we always say, we didn't have to do all this kind of things more than tornado drills or whatever, fire drills, but it'll hopefully spark la revolution.
Yeah, I certainly... That's really what gives me hope is younger generations and, you know, a global toppling of the patriarchy.
Yeah, truly, or like seeing what happened in Hungary with a new leader who just came in and was like, all that money that you gave away, we're actually going to claw it back because they had an authoritarian in charge for about 16 years and say like, oh, in this propaganda news station, I hope you enjoy yourself because we're about to shut you off. So just that kind of stuff where a meaningful mass change, I'm hoping we'll all be inspired by Hungary and be hungry for change here, if you know what I'm saying. And we're 6 months from the midterms and people don't like what they're seeing anywhere at all. So hopefully that means we're going to smash the book on who's currently in charge. Much dude, like you did, anonymous.
His penis
hero.
Wouldn't even fit in it. It'd be no. like, what? What is that? No. Is that your pinky?
No, it's
what
a tiny that right guidebook. There? That's what we have to do. It's just a little like a pocket Spanish or pocket Italian right? traveling book. But this is the move. I mean, don't pull it out if you don't want to get smashed.
No,
is what I say.
And good for you for smashing it in there. Fuck him. I remember guys in high school doing stupid shit like this. Mm-hmm. Not as blatant as straight up showing their wiener in class, but mm-hmm. I think I've said before how they all thought it was real funny to be like, hey, you want to see your mom? And then you look over and they've tucked it. So it's just a bunch of pubes. Mm-hmm. That was something that I saw more than once from more than one person.
No,
and I do. Now and at the time, even though you were uncomfortable, you laugh it off because, you know, you'd get called a bitch and other things if you said mm-hmm. anything. And you felt like, oh, I got to be cool about it, or I'm going to like, nobody's going to like me anymore. Or even worse, they keep doing it because they know it bothers me. So mm-hmm. I'll just act like it doesn't bother me. Now, if Ella came home and said, this happened to me, oh my goodness.
Scorched earth. Earth scorched.
Oh my goodness. And you know, I mean, I didn't say anything like to people in, mm-hmm. I mean, to adults and stuff. Like my friends, they were all part of it too, the mm-hmm. on both sides of it. So, you know, I hope that we are getting to a point where stuff like that is completely like when somebody hears about it, it's not funny at all. It's immediately like, who's this guy? Okay, where's parents? All right, how long are we going to suspend him? Are we expelling mm-hmm, them? Like, mm-hmm. what's the punishment here?
Yeah, and societally, I mean, or socially, I guess, like having other students not also laugh at it, but go, mm-hmm. did you just pull your dick out in class? That's literally so embarrassing and mm-hmm. gross. No one wants to see your dirty dick. Like, put that nasty shit away. A guy came and pulled his balls out in front of me when I was in probably, I don't know, 9th or 10th grade. It was like, I think after school theater thing or whatever. And he was much older. I think he was a junior and maybe senior, but just it was like you said, ask a question and you like turn and look, and there's mm-hmm. I was sitting at a desk and he was standing up, so there was just like this guy's ball sack in my face mm-hmm. and like you said, at the time you kind of freeze and you're like ugh. And luckily, you know, my girlfriends at the time, we were like, ew, gross, like get away, whatever, but he would still do it to other girls. So yeah. I think having more of a social pressure of like, oh, is that the wiener puller outer? Okay, embarrassing. Mm-hmm. We're going to call him Peekaboo Tom. Like, ugh. I don't advocate for bullying unless someone's sexually abusing you, in which case, give them an offensive nickname and it'll yeah. stick for the rest of their life. And you know what? Train your kids. Don't pull their dicks out at school.
Yeah.
Probably be that.
I think that is the key. That so much of this begins at home. And yeah. either they see how their parents treat each other or treat, you know, other people, and they think, well, my dad says sexist stuff all the time, so I know I'm not going to get in trouble for this. Uh-huh. Or they're peer pressured by their friends, but that also starts at home too. So like the message now of parents hopefully saying like, we don't do that. That uh-huh. is not funny. That is assault. Uh-huh. That is non-consensual what you're doing, and we won't tolerate it.
Because the dick puller outers in history class become the dick puller outers behind the 7-Eleven, become mm-hmm. the rapists that pull you on, you know, pull you behind a dumpster. And you know what I mean? It has to be nipped in the bud as quickly as possible, or smashed in the book, whatever you want to do.
Or cut with the guillotine. That's something's right. happening.
Something's happening.
Nipped Mama by the guillotine.
Mama will make sure. And by that, I mean, mm-hmm. we're going to make America matriarchal. But mm-hmm. I do thank you, Anonymous, for sharing that, and bless you and all your sweet students. Thanks for what you do as a librarian. It's a
absolutely
safe place for a lot of kids. Sinisterhood, we'll be right back. Well, this next one's from my other daughter, Anonymous, and the subject line is, the ghost got me in trouble and then had its revenge. Hi, Christy and Heather. After many, many years of being a listener and my husband constantly telling me to write in, I decided to finally do it. After forever pondering on what I should write, I decided to tell you about the time the ghost got me in trouble and then had its revenge. Before I start, I wanted to thank you both for being on the right side of history. You will never know how much that means to me. Now, onto the ghost that got me in trouble. Being Hispanic, I grew up in a house with a lot of family. I'm talking aunts, uncles, grandparents, cousins, you get the point. For this particular story, I'm going to be talking about my Aunt Liz, my cousin Kevin, and myself, Anon. Kevin and I were only a year apart, so at this time, we were around 8 or 9 years old. On this particular day, my Aunt Liz was watching us. For whatever reason, no one else was home. The three of us had just come back from our local Toots, shout out Chicago, when Kevin and I decided to go take a nap in the living room. All I remember was falling asleep on the couch when, out of nowhere, my cousin was screaming bloody murder. I'm talking the most awful screaming you've ever heard. I bolt upright and saw my aunt running down the stairs. She asked him, "Why is he crying and screaming?" And he tells her that I whispered in his ear that I was going to kill him. Me? Kill him? I immediately started telling her, "I never said that. I was asleep." Obviously, she did not believe me. My cousin said that he was asleep when he heard me laugh, this really ugly laugh in his ear, and then tell him I was going to kill him. I got so mad. Well, as mad as an 8-year-old could get, and I went downstairs to the basement. That's where my parents and I lived at the time. The day went on, and at some point, my parents got home. We all had dinner together, and then it was time for bed. Now, this is the part that always freaks out everyone I tell this story to. It freaks me the fuck out writing it. It's important that I give you a visual of what the basement looked like, at least the parts that matter. Imagine a big rectangle, all the way to the left. That was my parents' bed. My bed was on the far right, separated by a small divider, so I couldn't see my parents' bed and they couldn't see mine. To get into the room, you would have to go through my parents' bed area, past them, and then into my space. This is the most important part. In front of my bed was my TV. Like, literally, it was in front of my bed. There was no space for anything to go between that. Behind my TV, there was about 10 feet of space and then a closet. That night was probably the worst and one of the last nights we would live there. As I was falling asleep in the darkness in the quiet of our bedroom, I felt something grab onto my ankles. It was so quick, everything happened so fast. As soon as I felt the cold hands grabbing my ankles, I got pulled down my bed. Not a small tug, no. This thing was dragging me, Paranormal Activity style. I screamed bloody murder. Also, I have goosebumps writing this. My parents immediately ran to my bed, and I was in shambles. I was a mess. I could not stop crying. Through my tears, panic, and fear, I managed to tell my parents what had just happened. My dad, in dad mode, checked under my bed, closet, etc. Nothing. There was nothing there. It took them forever to calm me down, and for weeks, I slept in their bed. The worst part was that we would live there a bit longer, but luckily it never happened again. The next morning, my parents told my family what happened. Turns out, others had similar paranormal experiences in the house. To this day, I swear it was the same ghost that kept pushing me down the stairs. But I guess that's a story for another time. Keep it creepy, Anon.
One of the scariest parts of a movie that I can remember in like the past 2 decades is that first Paranormal Activity when she gets yanked out of that bed and dragged down the hallway.
It makes me
I'm like
blood run cold,
sweating thinking
like
about
nervous.
It right now. Yes
nervous yeah. about thinking about it, because it is something about not only that you're asleep, vulnerable, but that it's something that can physically touch you, and mm-hmm. not only that, but take it's strong enough to take you away. And the implication being, well, if you could take me out of my bed, where else could you take me? You could just snatch me to the next realm.
Mm-hmm.
What's on the other side of that closet door? I don't like it.
I don't like it either. It sounds like your cousin, you, and a lot of other people in the house were experiencing this, but no one was saying it, so nobody knew until afterwards. The fact that you even continue to sleep there after that night, you're braver than I ever would have been.
It's one of those where it's like, well, I guess I have to go to the basement because that's where my bed is, because mm-hmm. most of the time we all want to avoid basements. But it sucks too, because you're like, this is my cozy little corner, my safe space with my TV, and now I got fucking snatched by ice cold hands too.
No.
I cannot.
All I'm picturing is that scene in porn. Oh, the comforter pulls back. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes,
y'all all
it.
Remember the flower they leave on the floor, and then you see the hoof prints in it.
I can't.
That first Paranormal Activity, so fucking scary. The other mm-hmm. ones, still kind of scary, but so many of the things they did were repeated that the first mm-hmm. one was like just a new form of terror.
Yeah. And that framing too of like you're watching them through their cameras and stuff that gives you like that voyeuristic extra element of like, oh God, these people are just trying to live their lives. They're getting snatched out of their beds.
She's just standing next to his bed rocking as the time ticks.
That's so fucked up too. Yeah. That and I think it's in a future one where somebody's on a couch and somebody sneaks up behind him. And to this day, I'm like, I don't like sitting on couches.
What do they do?
I think so. I think they kill
really?
Him. Yeah, or grab him from behind. Somebody sneaks up behind. Well, I only watched it once because I was like too traumatized.
I don't remember Bess happening.
I can't remember. No, it was.
I blocked it out.
Well, and also, I think you got to get more extreme as they go on. But
yeah, for sure.
Man, shit like this, you did nothing wrong. I'm sorry that you were wrongfully, you were being besmirched by a ghost.
Yes.
Tricked into sowing discontent between you and your cousin. But you know what? It sounds like a pretty rough entity if it was saying, I'm going to kill you. In like a kid's ear. That's not
shoving
like
shoving you down the stairs.
Yeah.
Pulling you down your bed. Yeah, that's, I don't like that one bit.
Gotta exercise the demons. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Anon, for sharing that one. Sinister Hood, we'll be right back. This final one is from Allie, and the subject line is Visits at the End. Hey ladies, I was introduced to you through a coworker's husband after she heard me listening to a crossover podcast with Patrick and Jillian from TCO. He listens to you while he drives all day. After hearing the story in Freaky Friday 209 about Jessica's father's dream giving him his death date, I felt like I needed to share this. In 2022, my mom was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer that had spread throughout her body. During the first week she was hospitalized, we would sit together in her room waiting for results. We didn't talk much, probably avoiding the news out loud. I started noticing her looking out the window, or toward the hallway, shaking her head quietly and saying, "No, not yet." I didn't question it at first. I was in denial, so I naturally assumed she was just processing everything in her head, in denial also. The day before we left the hospital for the first time, she clearly said, "I told you no, I am not ready yet." I was surprised, as I had not said anything, and I asked her who she was talking to. After a pause, she told me that my grandpa and Uncle Steve had been visiting her all week, telling her it was time to go with them. Hearing that wasn't something I was ready for, and she hadn't wanted to tell me that for that reason. As I'm sure you figured out, they both passed. My uncle died in a tragic trucking accident in the 80s, and my grandpa in his sleep in the 90s due to diabetes complications. I remember looking around the room and saying out loud, "No, I'm not ready yet. We need more time." After that, either they stopped coming or she stopped telling me. Until Mother's Day weekend, when we had to put her in an at-home hospice and everyone was coming to visit. I would sit with her and catch her looking out the window and waving. When I asked who she was waving to, she said, "Everyone." That's when I knew. The window she was looking out was a second floor window, and there would be no way to see anyone living out that window, only trees. I've never told anyone in my family that they were all there that day, or what she said, but I know our loved ones are with us when our time is close, and they will do anything to make us comfortable. I understand now that my grandpa and uncle were trying to save my mom from pain. She visits me often in my dreams. At first, she would hide from me, and I would find her in random places and ask, "What are you doing here? You died." For about 6 months, she would always say, "I needed a break. I needed to get away," and then run away. Eventually, she stopped running. The first dream she stopped running, we sat at a booth at a cafe, just talking and catching up. Someone asked why we were talking like we hadn't seen each other in forever, and we both said, "Because we haven't." It was the first time I was able to talk to her without questioning why she was there. I think that's why she started staying. She still visits me, especially when I'm struggling. It feels like she's reminding me that she's always with me and that she'll let me know when it's time. She also visits her twin sister. My aunt tells me when it happens. My mom reminds her it isn't time yet and that she'll let her know when it is. She struggled the most after my mom passed. My mom wouldn't even let my aunt get close to her until my aunt stopped asking why she couldn't join my mom. I've never written all this out before, and I'm crying just getting through it, but hearing your show made me feel like maybe this was something worth sharing. Attaching the puppy tax, Scout, my Cocker Spaniel that my mom got before she passed, and Barkley, our blue tick coonhound, who is the biggest baby you will ever meet, as you can tell by the picture. Thanks for what you do.
Well, these are sweet little babies.
The coonhound those is a baby.
Those eyes. Oh, my goodness. How could anybody say no to those faces?
Any of y'all do anything for either of you?
Yes.
Sweet puppies.
Oh, Allie. Such a hard thing to go through mm-hmm. on every level. I'm glad that there was some positivity that you took away from this, that mm-hmm. when it is our time to go, our loved ones are waiting right there to help us.
You're going
to
help us journey over. Yeah, my dad was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer, and it had spread throughout his body as well. And it was the first time that I'd ever talked about death with him. That was like, you know, and he actually even said that one time. He was like, I haven't even thought about death. And I think seeing our parents kind of in a vulnerable position, you're like, you feel powerless and you're like, I want to fix you. I want to help you. Like you said, being in denial, I'm like, well, if I read every book and I know every single thing, you know, I can fix this. But there is something beautiful and comforting about letting go to something larger than us, whether it's the one unifying source that we're all a part of or specific spiritual connections, guardians, whatever you want to call them, angels, that you're not alone. Like you are part of a family. You're part of a network of souls that all came here together. And so you did what you could for your mom on this side. And then your uncle and grandpa were ready to take her to the next side. It's got to be unimaginable to lose a twin. So condolences as well to your aunt, because that is, I can imagine her saying like, well, I want to die too. Like you're my other half. Yeah.
Yeah, it's hospice is, it's, I'm so glad it exists. And people that work in hospice, you are angels on earth. Mm-hmm. It is, you know, kind of like the final thing where you're like, this is going to happen soon and we all know it. And let's just make them comfortable. So to see that she's getting some positivity from the other side, I hope made it a little easier to let go. Mm-hmm. And for her too, you know, like we don't want to let them go. They don't want to let go. But I remember like when my grandfather was actively dying, just had a few days. And I remember my mom, like we were standing by the hospital bed and she was like, it's okay to let go. Cause you know, you just mm-hmm. feel like if you're holding on for us, mm-hmm. we want you to be at peace and out of pain. So mm-hmm. it's okay to just let go. We're all going to be okay and you'll be okay.
Yeah. So my brother said the same thing to my dad of like, I got him, brother. He's like, I got the family. Like you can mm-hmm. let go. Like don't, if you feel like you have to stay cause you got to take care of everybody. Don't feel that way. So
yeah,
like you said, people who are death doulas, who are hospice nurses, who are any of those type of folks that work in the death care business, you are vital and make what is the worst day of any of our lives bearable and something that we realize even familial wise, we're not alone, but bigger than that, so, you know, socially, we're not alone. Thank you for people who take these very thankless sometimes and extremely emotionally difficult jobs in healthcare, medical care, and especially death care. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad you got a little like a semblance of your mom wasn't going to cross alone. Like there was some welcoming arms ready to receive her, and that she visits you too. That's incredible. Visitation dreams are crazy, man. It's such a weird different.
Yeah. Feeling. That's so interesting about the running. Mm-hmm. I watched a video the other day of I believe it was she had lost her sister, of a woman talking about having lost her sister and to kind of try to connect with her on the other side, she did ayahuasca, which she had done previously and had some like breakthroughs. And she, I guess Aya is the god of ayahuasca. I don't know much about it. I know like Gaia is the god of earth. But she asked at the beginning, like, I just really want to see my sister. And she found herself in this place that was like these giant almost rocks that were kind of this beautiful, deep purple. And she knew that like her sister was the rock. And through like telepathically, her sister like communicated with her, who I believe was special needs and had been abused, that life was so hard for me living that I just need like a break right now and to heal. And apparently that is something many people talk about in the afterlife, is kind of this place of healing where you go, and it's almost like a cocoon, or like this, she described it as like a boulder that the soul is kept in to heal before moving on. And I had never heard about that, but like so many people were commenting like, I had a dream and this is what happened. I've read this book, and in this culture, like they speak about this happening. And I'd never thought about like a living person experiencing so much pain that they need like a safe place to recover before they fully cross over.
Yeah, just the idea of like deep soul pain needing that like is maybe unhealable here on Earth, that is there's somewhere else to go to plug in to heal or be like you said, like a safe place, or
you
like
feel
kind
protected
of under the wing of something bigger than us. That's what a magical thing.
Yeah.
Things like that were, and I think with between ayahuasca, mushrooms, near death experiences, all that, you're all kind of getting to the same place, different areas in the same place. Mm-hmm. Like if it's a mall, maybe ayahuasca takes you to the glamour shots, and then maybe mushrooms take you to the arcade, and maybe near death experience takes you to the basement. But you're kind of, you know, I think we're all kind of going to a somewhere that not the same as Mall World, which is a separate.
I like the ayahuasca was glamour shots.
It's glamour shots. I don't know. I'm just thinking about what's
I was
in the
like,
mall.
Hot Topic, Spencer's, maybe.
Yeah, Spencer. Honestly, ayahuasca is probably Spencer's. Let's be real here. And DMT is Hot Topic, maybe.
Probably so. Yeah.
But I think, you know, or like, you know, you have a head injury or something. Sometimes people have almost like a near death experience type of thing. So I don't know what it is, but I love exploring different facets of it with you. Yeah. So maybe your mom was in a place like that, the healing place that I just needed a break, and now can come visit freely.
Yeah. Beautiful. Well, thank you to everyone that sent in your stories today. If you have an odd but true story, maybe you've encountered Bigfoot, you've seen a UFO, you had a brush with true crime, or you felt the presence of an otherworldly being, send them in at sinisterhood.com/freakyfriday. Speaking of freaky, have you got something creepy caught on camera, found a weird or unexplainable clip online? Maybe you just have a funny video you want us to see. Send it our way and we'll live react to it during Sunday Scaries, our weekly live stream over on Patreon every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Central. It's totally free. You enter your email, you get immediate access to Sunday Scaries, the chat, and a whole backlog of free content just for signing up for free. We are on hiatus until May 3rd, and then we'll be back better than ever.
Can't wait, baby.
Well, if you like our free episodes like the one you heard today, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next, or dive into over 1,000 hours of content like Judge Christie, where I rule on petty grievances you bring before the court. True Crime Headlines, where we break down the latest news and updates in true crime. Heather Saves, where anything Heather has found late night scrolling could be discussed. And Am I the Asshole, Unpopular Opinions, and other subreddits that we feel require our input.
We're also offering free trials. That is where you join for free for a week at any of the tiers. It doesn't cost you anything. You can binge, check out all the perks. And if you cancel before the week is over, you will not get charged. But if you do stick around, join at one of the tiers and do an annual membership so you get 1 month free. And what all do you get when you join at a tier?
You get ad-free episodes, monthly live stream Q&As, quarterly live stream bonus content that we let you all vote on the content you want to see. You get weekly audio bonus content, minisodes, merch discounts, and a community of the best listeners on the whole internet.
And don't forget, Thursday, April 23rd at 8:30 p.m. Central, we are having our April live Q&A. So if you do your free trial this, you know, start it today, you get to go through next week. You get to join the live stream for free, baby. Mm-hmm. Not to mention, check out the pinned post on Patreon to get your merch discount. Then head over to sinisterhood.com and click shop on the top banner to check out all of our merch, like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show. Thank you so much for everyone that's left kind words and 5 stars. You can submit topics and cases you'd like us to cover, and you'll find fun things like topic-based playlists, And of course, tickets for Crime Wave at Sea 2027.
We can't wait. Follow us over on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Follow us over on YouTube and TikTok at Sinisterhood Podcast to watch clips from the episodes, live streams, and more. And if you are looking for a unique and personal gift for the Sinisterhood fan in your life, or maybe you want to treat yourself to a pep talk, book a cameo now. From happy birthdays to birth announcements to congrats on whatever, we would love to create a customized video that can be immediately viewed and sent. It's a thoughtful gift. It's perfect when you don't want to deal with the hassles of last minute shopping. And as a both of us have received cameos from one another, not like I didn't go like, hey, Christy, it's Heather from Sinisterhood, but we've purchased cameos of people that we like. And it was such a fun and thoughtful gift. So I still thank you for my Coach Bennett cameo.
Yes. And I thank you. While she is not a person, she lives in my heart still, my Fiona the Hippo.
Hell cameo. Yeah. We'll go to cameo.com/sinisterhood and book your Sinisterhood cameo for the loved one in your life or yourself today. Mm-hmm. Where can people find you online?
I'm on Instagram and Threads at Christy M. Wallace and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
I'm on the internet at Heather versus the world.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Sinning.